your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte is off tonight. This first hour, we're going to do a rebroadcast of Stan Dale that goes back to, May 24th, 2008. And we got him, persuaded him to hold over into the second hour. And we were joined the second hour by Dr. Fred Bell. And they both have wide experience in UFOs and these alien propulsion systems and so forth. And it was just a really dynamic second hour there, both with Stan Dale and Dr. Fred Bell. We're going to cover a little bit of the news here for about 17 minutes and 36 seconds, I believe, and just bring you up to date on what we feel is happening in the real world out here, and then we'll go to this rebroadcast, and also we'll do a preface of the second hour with some additional news. Monica Lewinsky was in the news recently, a Vanity Fair article, and she lays her heart out about having become involved with Bill Clinton and so forth. Vanity Fair is one of those magazines that really, you know what I mean, that really gets into some of these really insightful articles over the year. And she was right about the lack of empathy shown by the feminist lobby who joined the hyena pack, casting judgment on her youthful conduct. Of course, when Bill Clinton took advantage of her, you know, he was president of the United States. So this is the worst that a employer or a boss could do to a young girl. And she was in a position where, you know, she was going for the deal too. So it wasn't just totally Bill Clinton, but it was just a horrendously, just terrible type of scandal to come out of the White House. And Bill Clinton was at the middle of it and right in the throes of it. President Obama is out here on the West Coast, at the home of the Horns at the Bel Air home to raise money for the House Senate Victory Fund. Okay, so he goes out there to raise money, and he starts making rumblings about, my gosh, there's a dysfunctional America. Well, I mean, Mr. President, you're a big part of that. And, yeah, America has become dysfunctional over the years. But, Mr. President, you've got to start stepping up to the plate and admitting that you're pretty much a part of this dysfunction, too. We've had scandal after scandal in the last 2 years of his administration, into this third year, and so many months now. So, I mean, it's not just the American public. And he's saying, well, you know, these people out here, they're into conspiracies and so on, and they've got to start addressing the more important things and so forth. Well, you know, there are important things, but the country is lost into sports and all kinds of diversions and so forth that really everyone is just into entertainment. There were some things that happened in the 50s that the CIA had set up. And when we're talking about the media here, we're talking about farming people's minds in a mind wash type of system. Operation Mockingbird was a secret Central Intelligence Agency campaign to influence domestic and foreign media beginning in the 50s. Well, along with that, though, you had the Dulles brothers, John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles, that both started hyping the Cold War and creating a frenzy and creating an enemy in the form of the Soviet Union at the time. John Fitzgerald Kennedy wanted to cool things down, but when he was assassinated in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963, that ended his political, you know, ambitions and so forth, and his political career with that, you know, assassination. But he did want to cool things down at the time. But these men like John Foster Dulles and Allen Dulles, they had this mindset. And that mindset really started nurturing and creating a worsening situation than possibly existed. You have to go back to some of the Sukarno. President Sukarno of Indonesia had become a friend of John Kennedy's. And becoming a friend of his in a country at the time that had a large communist party was a problem with John Foster Dulles and Allen Dulles. Plus, Sukarno, President Sukarno, wanted to nationalize certain oil interests and so forth. So the oil companies and the big mining interests considered Sukarno an enemy, and that's where they turned. And Sotero, see, Colonel Sotero, which was President Obama's stepdad, was in charge, along with his wife, which was Obama's mother, into identifying certain communist elements in Indonesia. And they liquidated what happened was the Sukarno presidential power base were undermined by a revolutionary Suharto that was supported by the CIA. So when Sukarno was taken out, then a purge of the Communist Party of Indonesia ensued. And Sotero, who was President Obama's stepdad, was involved in this purge, and there's quite a bit of evidence that can back that up. So as a result, Indonesia was turned over, the power base was, and Suharto came to power, and he was friendly to the West, and he immediately did not continue any kind of a nationalization of those oil interests. So we've got a lot of intrigue that's going on over there. This Mockingbird, okay, Operation Mockingbird, okay, it was run by Allen Dulles, who was director of the CIA at the time. And the Washington Post was deeply involved in this, okay? And there were many of these outstanding writers and so forth that were columnists and publishers and so forth that were caught up in this whole CIA, you know, operation. They were run, the operation was run by William Paley, CBS, Henry Luce, Time and Life, Arthur Hayes, Schulzberger, New York Times, Alfred Friendly, managing editor of the Washington Post, Jerry O'Leary, Washington Star, Hal Hendricks, and so forth. I mean, it's just mind-boggling the people that the CIA had on their payroll to continue to put forth into American press certain ideas. And those ideas were that the Soviet Union was very dangerous, and we had to deal with it in a very by building up our defense and our offensive weapon systems. And so that's really what this whole mind-washing system was about. Also, what happened about the same time in 54, and we're coming up on a Bilderberg group meeting here at the end of May. It's going to be the 30th, 31st, and the 1st of June. It's going to be 29th, 30th, 31st, and the 1st of June probably will be their travel day. C.D. Jackson is an interesting individual when it comes to the Bilderberg and the first 1954 meeting, which was held at the Bilderberg Hotel in the Netherlands. And he actually headed up the American, okay, you could say, contingency of the Bilderberg. And he was an international advisor to Eisenhower, Dwight D. Eisenhower. And so he did lead our group at the Bilderberg meeting, which was the first one in 1954. So it's clear that out of the Bilderberg, just a few short years, came the Treaty of Rome, and it was nurtured by the Bilderberg discussions of that previous year, would be 56. They're very powerful. They're corrupt. They're very, you could say diabolical, these people. And they're going to meet in Denmark this coming year, this coming May. And at that time, we're going to be there. Farrell Montgomery and I are going to be over there and cover the Bilderberg meeting of 2014 and just see what we can do to bring a glimmer of light and understanding to what has been going on in the past. Like I was saying earlier, the C.D. Jackson, Charles Douglas Jackson, he served as a special assistant to President Dwight D. Eisenhower from 1953 to 54, about a year in there. And C.D. Jackson's papers are in there. Oh, by the way, he was responsible for the attack on Joe McCarthy, see. And the John Birch Society has an excellent, we're going to put this up, the real Joe McCarthy record. And they have an excellent article on that. And we'll have a click off on that on our site, thesecrettruth.com. So go in there and look at that and read that article. It's called The Real McCarthy Record. And they've got all these little college graduates coming out. The McCarthyism this, McCarthyism that. Well, what I do is I ask those little graduates coming out of to look at the Mockingbird. Okay, look at the Operation Mockingbird, and then you'll begin to see how all of these people were turned against McCarthy. He was trying to out communist elements in our government and so forth, and they were there. There's no doubt now when we look at the record, the historical record, that they were there. And now they're making fun of it like it never existed and so forth. The play is still going on. And the play is that they're bringing a communist, a collective state to the lower levels of our country. The top level is still a corporate type of fascism. And for the lower level, that's why this Obamacare is so diabolical. It's putting everyone under the dominance of a very, very centralized and strong government. Everyone's registering. Everyone's information is within the federal system. And this is what's really so diabolical and harmful to our freedoms and liberties. We've got to try to come out of this state of not realizing, you know, what's going on in the country. It's simple when you can step out of it, but there's always people that benefit by salaries and incomes and things like this. So it's not that easy to totally escape out of this. But we'll have the real McCarthy record up there. We'll have a click off here on Mockingbird, which was the Central Intelligence Campaign to influence domestic and foreign media. We've got new ongoing programs now that are doing the same thing. So it's just very powerful. One example right now of someone that's a great influence, but up to a point he's a good influence, and then when you go past a certain point he's a negative influence. That would be Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is like a sleeper. That I would describe as someone that has some really good constitutional issues and so forth and arguments. But at the end, he doesn't help us on 9/11, and he's not continuing to push for federal auditing of the Fed. Now, Rand Paul has a new bill out calling for the auditing of the Fed, and so this may catch on again. Ron Paul came fairly close. He had a bill. They voted for it, but it didn't have the traction that they needed. But he did put it up through the House. It didn't get anywhere in the Senate. The Federal Reserve is very powerful. They're not going to relinquish any of their power. Yellen now is the new chairman of the Federal Reserve, and all she's doing is continuing to quantitative easing. The problem with quantitative easing is like pushing the end of a string and trying to get the other end to move. It's all it's doing right now is buying time for the financial institutions that someday have to reconcile their books. That's why these rumblings overseas are very ominous and very dangerous for this country. Whenever you get involved in these overseas conflicts like the one that's unfolding now in the Ukraine, and of course Syria, we've seen that quieting down some, but Assad has moved decidedly against the rebels. This agreement that he had on this chemical warfare material has helped him gain the upper hand over the rebels, and Homs has just been evacuated. But they're still being equipped by the Western powers along with America. You can just look at Libya. It's what a mess that is. And Hillary Clinton had a great deal to do with that. And so that's exactly what has been coming out of the Obama administration, is a total inept mess, and especially in these foreign affairs. I believe personally that many of your top generals and so forth in your military and in your Pentagon are beginning to get fed up and say, hey, we've got really a dangerous situation here. We've got to do something about it, and we've got to really make this thing count and trying to bring this country back off the precipice of destruction. And it's not going to be easy. Every year we have more and more deterioration in our government, and a greater and greater power. This Bundy thing out in Nevada recently was the reason why people came behind him, because he did succeed in winning against the federal government for at least a short period of time, and that's why people came very, very strongly in support of him, and supported him in his endeavors to fend off an attack. And now they're saying, well, there's 90-something acres owned by Harry Reid, and that was going to be part of this solar. And it's just there's so much corruption in the government now. But Harry Reid is going to lose his power. And there's changes occurring now with ISA. What's really serious is that this government, this Congress, especially the Republicans within the House, are getting serious about these corrupt these scandals. And there's the IRS, and they're threatening Lois Lerner with perjury charges. They voted them the other day. They're saying that they have the right to arrest people. The Capitol Police, little known to most people, is actually controlled by the U.S. legislature. And so they report directly to the legislature, the U.S. Congress. And I believe the person over those people, the Capitol Police, would be the Speaker of the House. So they're making rumblings now, some of these people, about arresting Lois Lerner and so forth. I don't know if that'll ever occur. It has occurred over historically. It was a fact at certain times in the United States history that they did arrest people that had just gone too far. When she got up and started taking the Fifth, she shouldn't have made a statement, but she did. And then she went on and continued to defend herself, you know, that she was right and so forth. And actually, she should have just said stated the Fifth and gone and left. But when she opened up and started making statements and so forth and so on, this opened her up to attack by the Republicans on that committee. There are members in Congress that are on the Democratic side that are continuing to say that, oh, they're just witch hunting, especially on the Benghazi. There's one U.S. representative that he's making rumblings that it is just a witch hunt. Well, there were four men that died there in Benghazi. It's not a witch hunt. Look at Libya. It's a mess. It's an inept mess. And if it's true that many of these military people viewed much of the Benghazi conflict for a number of hours using drones, they had drones above, I think they became very, very disgusted in the whole thing. So we're going to be tuning in here in just a few minutes, with less than about a minute here, to the replay, a rebroadcast that occurred on May 24, 2008. This first hour is Stan Dale. He's quite an adventurer. He got stranded down in Australia for about 25 years. They wouldn't let him come home. But anyway, listen to that, and don't forget, WeThePeopleBilderberg.com. WeThePeopleBilderberg.com. Go in there, click on the chip insight, and contribute a little support for us. But anyway, hope you enjoy this next 40-something minutes and so. Thank you for being with us this evening.
And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown. Good evening, George.
Yeah, good evening. How was your weekend, Charlotte, so far?
Oh, it's been fabulous. Weather's wonderful here in Texas, and I understand there's some storms brewing around, but we had it pretty good down here in Austin.
We've got quite a 1-2 punch today. The first hour, we have Stan Dale with us, and the second hour, we have Dr. Fred Bell. So both of these individuals and gentlemen have really researched into deep, deep space and aliens and propulsion systems and energy, free energy sources and everything else. Let me tell you a little bit about our first guest. Stan Dale, his main love is still advanced propulsion and free energy research, which took him to Australia in 1971 to work on these systems as part of a global project under the direction of such men as Dr. Edward Teller and Dr. Andrei Sokharov. Currently, Stan is working on a Tesla-based energy system and several propulsion projects. He's giving interviews like this one tonight. He's been on Coast to Coast. I heard him years ago. It must have been 10 years ago on Art Bell Show. But he's also an active partner in Dale Enterprises, LLC, and is the chief executive officer of Halo Orbital Technologies, LLC. His site is standeo.com. Welcome to our program, Mr. Dale.
Thank you, George and Charlotte.
Hi, Stan.
How's Texas today?
Oh, it's warm down here.
How's it
in Colorado?
It's
well,
perfect.
I tell you, Colorado's lucky to be here. We're going to be over North Texas soon with the wind like it is. We've been having 40 and 50 mile an hour gusts out here.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of storms.
You know what I noticed about your site? It's like survivability, and it's a preparedness site also, and it's about earth changes. Is that what y'all are into also?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the earth changes. We started looking at that years ago from the biblical prophecies of the end days and saying, well, are there any signs of such things approaching? And that's how I got started in 95 with the earthquake stuff, and then Art Bell picked me up, and I started doing it on a more regular basis and was able to forecast about 70% accurate major quakes along the fault line of the, you know, say the Ring of Fire and the tributary fault lines that go over into the Middle East and the Atlantic. But once the Navy stopped letting me have the data, I couldn't do that, and so I had a 10-year run. But that's what got us started anyway, and Holly's picked it up now and made it a super-duper site, actually two sites, a prep site and a daily news site on the things in the news that look at earth changes, look at economy, look at, you know, viral threats, terrorist things, all the hot buttons at the moment for what's happening in the world.
Is there anything right now that you can bring us up to date that you're really concerned about? Anything that just pops up in your head?
Or goodness.
Is there any goodness, Stan?
Well, I let's see, goodness.
see what she does to me, Stan?
I don't know.
She makes me do go positive.
All right. The good news is all this stuff has been prophesied for many thousands of years, a couple thousand anyway, and I'm seeing signs now then that definitely prove that the prophecies are true. And so I skipped to the end of the book and read the ending, and the ending is really good. Everything works out. We have a beautiful planet restored, and how's that?
Oh, I like that.
We did want to mention one thing before we proceed too much further. We're dedicating this program to your dad. It's a Memorial Day weekend. We know that. But
well,
his name was Harold Stanley Dale Sr. I've got the complete printout here. Tell us a little bit about your dad, would you?
Well, he was a pretty interesting fellow, like a lot of his fellow soldiers and lady, you know, soldiers as well in World War II. He went over to Europe after he was an instructor pilot here in the States in Texas for quite a while there in San Antonio, and then went on over to the Middle East and then into North Africa, flying larger planes, transporting back and forth. And certainly had a number of very interesting tales to tell about, you know, nearly blowing up when lightning struck the craft, and he had a fuel leak, and it was all full of fuel sloshing back and forth from the tail up to the cockpit. And listen to him tell it. Obviously, he passed a couple years ago, but listen to him tell the story. You could just feel yourself kind of clenching up in various parts of your anatomy that you sit on, thinking, I hope that bomb doesn't go off that you're riding up, you know. And then how he lost nav communication to one base over in Egypt, and it was at night, and he didn't know whether he was flying into to Rommel's area or what, you know, and he was looking for some sign out there and didn't see it eventually. But, you know, the good Lord had his hand on Dad for a long time. And when the war ended in 45 for everyone else, for Dad and a bunch of his men there on the air base there in Tehran, they couldn't go home. They had to stay in the Middle East because the CIA hadn't been formed yet, and the Russians were trying to take the oil, as you can read about there on the website. So when everybody wanted to go home, they were dog tired of fighting the war. Well, Dad, these guys, and the British continued too. The British officers and men had to stay, or were asked to stay, and they did. So between the Brits and the Yanks working together over there, they kept the Russians bluffed into thinking that U.S. and Britain had a huge air base there.
So this became like an operation then.
Yeah, and Dad could never, like the payroll for the guys was in cash, U.S. dollars, and a plane would arrive from somewhere. It was flown by TWA pilots, which was the Howard Hughes company, and Howard Hughes was the funnel for the operation, and the guy would give him the money, and he'd put it over into suitcases and bring the payroll to the guys over there. Howard Hughes, he was an interesting guy, too. But anyway, that's how it started for them over there, and they had to play for 2 years and pretend that they had a real Air Force base, and they had fake patches at a distance with binoculars and stuff. It looked like Army Air Force patches, and they had dog patrols going. They had the cannon firing in the morning, you know, for Reveille and all this kind of stuff. It kept all the military routines running, and Dad was the base commander there.
And, man.
So, you know, any moment, if the Russians figured out what they were up to, they could have either come in themselves or gotten the local sheikhs to come and attack them, and they couldn't have held them off.
I see.
So it was a bluff to hold the oil fields out of the Russian control.
Well, that guaranteed Western development, didn't it?
It did. And, you know, like many of the guys are over there, well, nobody ever knew about it. Dad told me about it, and even my brothers and sisters, most of the family didn't know when I gave the address at the funeral. You know, they were just astounded. And I remember my brother David got up after his over and he said, well, boy, he's not unsung now. And, you know,
He made some sacrifices. Another thing that piqued my interest was about this publication, A Texan Looks at Lyndon.
Yep.
Well, now that really, you know, hit home to me, right, being here in Austin. And my father, we knew the family, the Johnson family and everything, and so we could understand that book, and we could agree with it, too.
Well, Mr. Haley was certainly brave doing it.
He had guts. And your dad had guts, too.
Well, you know, there were some things that happened at the time that, you know, only our close friends knew about, but Johnson had the FBI come in their suits to our book mailing warehouse in Dallas. I mean, just a book warehouse, right, that we rented, to get those books out. And we had aunts, uncles, and everybody wrapping books to get, you know, millions of them out. Well, they would come out in their suits several times a week and go through our trash bins to see if we were doing anything they could get after us for, which we weren't. Then they called, somebody called my mother, because my brothers and sisters were small at the time and in grade school, said, your children are coming home in a shoebox in pieces if you don't have your husband stop this.
I see.
Well, Dad took his .45 Aero Commander pistol, and he sat down in the living room with Mom, and he says, now, Gussie, he says, I'm going to show you how to defend yourself if they come and after you while I'm
okay, we got to go. We'll be right back.
Get a grip. It's time to blast your forearms. The Armory is the absolute best training device to isolate and strengthen the muscles of the forearm and hand. With the Armory, you get the competitive advantage, that iron grip you desire. The Armory is patented and was designed specifically to increase your strength while being portable and easy to use. By strengthening your forearms and hands, the Armory will help you increase the length of your golf drive, accelerate your pitching speed, add power to your punch. The list goes on and on. When you use the Armory, you feel the muscle burn and experience a measurable improvement in your strength. So get a grip and increase your strength. Visit our website at armoryinfo.com today. That's armoryinfo.com. Order your Armory today.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Welcome back, Standale.
Thank you, guys.
Could you finish telling us that story? Yeah, we were back with your dad, and he was distributing this book.
He was teaching your mother how to use a firearm.
Tell us about this.
I'll finish that real quickly because it was a bit humorous.
Go ahead.
All the rest of us carried either carbines or 45s under towels in the front seat, like Mr. Haley taught us to do, because it was a threat. And so here he is sitting in the living room with Mom and on the couch. He says, "Now, Gus," he says, "this is called a safety, and you push this like that, and that means you can't fire it. You can point at the ceiling and pull the trigger, and boom." Well, of course, it blew a hole in the ceiling. And it was about 6 hours before Mom kind of came down and was over the shock, And needless to say, she never touched the gun again. I lived in that era and was exposed to the investigations that my dad and others, like Mr. Haley, did on the Illuminati. Eventually I even got recruited by the crowd for a short time down in Australia onto the periphery of it, and was able to see from the inside some of the things that they were doing and why. But that's where it started, was with Dad and his fight against the Illuminati. In fact, in Dallas, I was even recruited to work undercover for the FBI. I had two agents assigned to me, and Mr. Hoover at that time had an operation very quietly called Operation Illuminati, and he had a whole folder on it and was investigating everybody that moved or drew breath in Capitol Hill, I think. But anyway, that was I was recruited by them to monitor information and goings and comings from the White House just before the Watergate thing broke into the press. And fortunately, I was down in Australia by that time when it broke, so I didn't have to worry about getting caught up in all that. But we had some very interesting things happen there in Dallas, other than assassinations.
Yeah, that was Charlotte and I did a broadcast of 4 hours from the Texas School Book Depository up there around the time of the last anniversary in November.
I saw that on your website.
And what we did there also, we put a spoof together with JFK speaking up in New York. I don't know if you were able to listen to that yet.
Didn't have time for that, but tell me about it.
But what we did was put together a spoof, and we acted like we were reporting live from the Waldorf Astoria at this speech that JFK had given called The President and the Press. And he gets into these Illuminati and the secret society stuff it's a very, very insightful speech.
I really reckon that JFK, the reason they took him out is that he decided to go against his father's advisors and controllers, the Illuminists, and do it his own way.
Yeah, you're right. I believe, Stan, you're absolutely right with that judgment, that opinion.
I mean, not that we were Democrats or anything like that. I'm just being, analytical about it. And I don't know whether he'd have been any better than the Illuminists in the end. But I'm pretty sure that's what happened to him. They just stood back and let the other guys take him out.
He started stepping on a lot of very powerful people. And I think they decided together to go in there and get rid of him. And that's what we were up there. I was standing behind that picket fence, and it's only about a 55, 60 foot shot to the street.
Well, look, so, I went back with Dad when I came back to the States on a visit back in 84, 85, something like that. And Before I left Dallas, a man had turned himself in to me. I won't exactly say where he is. He might still be alive there. I'm not sure, but he worked in the service industry there in Dallas late at night, and because of his job had fairly frequent dealings with the mob there, you know, the mafia. And he came to my apartment one night after, you know, a couple years after the assassination even. It was probably in 69. It was a few years after. And he said, look, I understand that Mr. Garrison over in Louisiana is doing an investigation of this, and I want to turn in the .45 caliber pistol that was used for the close shot on the president. I said, what .45 caliber pistol? He says, well, look, there were three guys involved, and one of them was down in that rain drain, real slender hips and stuff. They pulled him through that little pipe down into the big rain drain under the street, and then okay. He ran. And I looked in the Warren Commission report, and I did find substantive information, like the one shot sounded like a cannon, which a .45 fired down that tunnel would have, you know, or down in that rain drain would have sounded like. And the Warren Commission report said a man was seen shortly thereafter coming up out of a hole in the train yard behind Dealey Plaza, there where you were standing, with ear cuffs around his neck, dressed in a suit and wearing the White House security detail colors of the day and an ID. So they let him through. Now, if you were firing down in that hole, you'd have needed something to keep from breaking your eardrums. So I went down in the hole, in the thing there under that light, which is between the grassy knoll and the president's limousine. And I stood there down in that hole. I stood up with my little camera, and I shot cars coming by until I got one that was in a convertible coming by. And you could have made the shot that made his head go backwards from right underneath him there. It would have gone in the throat and out the back of the head in the mastoid area like the evidence showed. So it is possible. The guy came to me and wanted to turn himself in with that stuff, and I gave him the contact details for the investigation over in Louisiana, and then he disappeared for a year and then came back because the investigation faltered. So there are a lot of mysteries surrounding that. I suppose we'll never, ever know the full details, but what he told me about certainly made sense.
Yeah, Jim Morris has done extensive research in that area. He's from that Fort Worth area, and so I know. And so he I think Crossfire was one of his books, Jim Morris.
I don't know that I read it. No. The only one I ever read after the fact that did catch my attention was I think it was called Executive Action or something like that, yeah. And that was because. It had in there, it mentioned about the cowboy, the tall, lanky guy that was down in the drain there, the street drain, like where I was standing. And so I didn't know who, I can't remember who wrote the book even now, but I did mark that because I thought, right, well, this agrees with what the witness told me about it for the Garrison, Jim Garrison investigation. So
right.
Anyway.
Okay.
Now,
yeah.
I wonder if the Coalition on Political Assassinations has that information.
I don't know. I don't know.
We interviewed one of their head of people, John Judge, up there in Dallas at the time we did that four-hour broadcast from the Texas School Book Depository.
Well, a lot of things around that mystery are probably going to remain that way until we go to the grave and get resurrected.
Well, one thing that did come out of that experience is that we know that government commissions, you know, are pretty lackluster and they don't measure up.
Yeah, right.
You reckon?
Yeah, I tell you. Okay, what are you up to now, right now, Standale? What is your projects that are online right now? What are you into right now? Tell us what's going on in your life today, in your career.
Well, let's
career.
See. A number
quite
of
a bit, right?
Yeah, quite
can
a
you
bit,
give actually. Can you give us a 2-minute answer there?
Yeah. Well, all right.
Okay.
List them in kind of random order here.
Okay.
Last week we were sitting at home on a Thursday evening, and Steve Quayle did a show with George Neary on Coast to Coast. That's
okay.
Fine. He does it every now and then. Holly is his webmaster, somewhere during the middle of the show, about 1:32 in the morning, Steve and George got to talking about Holly's book, the Dare to Prepare book, and you're on that website you're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
And it was just a casual mention. We listened to the program later, and it was maybe two or three sentences, and no beating.
Okay,
we can talk about it after the break.
Yeah, we'll have
Thanks,
to break.
Dad.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Welcome back, Standale.
Thank you. I'll try to get to answering your question there quickly, what I'm up to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Without further delay. Anyway, that show that Steve and George were talking on the show, The Coast to Coast, and they mentioned Holly's book. Well, at 2 o'clock in the morning, Friday morning, our phone started to ring, and Steve had apparently mentioned our number where they could get the book. And it did not stop ringing until Saturday in the evening. We had calls waiting. Our message banks overflowed. Hundreds and hundreds of people panicked, right?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm laughing, but that's good business.
Well, it's good business, but here's what it does.
But it devils the heck out of you, doesn't it?
Well, what it told us, though, was this. We've had shows. I've done shows there with George on the subject. So has Holly. And, you know, full three-hour shows, and we got responses. But the response last week, for the first time in all the time we've been doing the show on that kind of subject, was over 30 times what it was before.
My gosh.
Now, something has started waking up people. I mean, the phones are ringing still today. I mean, we're just hugely, hugely swamped with orders at the moment. Unbelievable amounts. And that means that America is sensing trouble out there.
Yes, I think so. And but also, you think they're gaining a little bit more enlightenment, a little bit of street smart and world smart, maybe, you think?
They are.
They're waking up to the problems and the deceptions.
Well, to the problems, we're getting around the deception, you know, bit by bit, because folks don't always kind of, you know, warm up to that kind of thing immediately.
Sure, sure.
You know how it is. They look at you, a conspiracy?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, wait till they've lived it. I'll tell you what, when you're watching your backside not to get your throat cut or shot or something, and it's a different conspiracy. It's real.
Well, you've been through it, and you've had to publish at times, haven't you, to protect yourself?
Yes, I wrote The Cosmic Conspiracy in 1978 and published it then, and that was, in essence, a way to tell the guys I used to work for, okay, I'm going to tell them this much in the overview, and you know what else I know, and if you lean on me, then the rest will come out. And they left me in Australia, took my citizenship away and my passport, and I was in exile for 30 years until one day they let me back in, back in 2001.
My gosh.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah, yeah. But you used to do, I remember listening to you when you were in Australia with Art Bell. You're on the line, you know what I mean? Long distance.
Yeah, that started in 1995.
Because I heard you when you first started. I've listened to Art Bell since almost when he started, you know?
Stan, I have a question. You did mention you had been back in the States in 84.
Yeah, I came through here. Well, they let me travel through. I had an Australian passport, and I was on the way to the Middle East with a film crew. They met us in San Francisco, in L.A., and put a two-man security team on us while we were in the country, so...
I see.
Was it some of your insights about anti-gravity or propulsion systems that they didn't want out? What was it that was the most critical and sensitive, you think?
You know, the most critical thing was a little box they had to convert heat into electricity from any source.
So it was free energy, you're saying, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you ever read Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, you remember John Galt in there had a little antenna and a box, and he drew electricity out of the atmosphere?
I don't remember. It's been a long time ago.
Well, that's how they powered their homes in that little valley where they all hid while the looters all did themselves in outside this valley.
Okay.
Now, Ayn Rand, who wrote that, was the mistress for Lord Rothschild just before she wrote the book, or even during the time she was writing it. A lot of the stuff that she put into that were character pieces from Rothschild and were also from people she'd met, industrialists, and the technology. I'm almost positive they had it at that time. They had developed the work of T. Henry Murray and gone further with it and just didn't tell him about it. That's the most astounding technology that I think that they didn't want me to release. In the beginning, I thought it was anti-gravity. But then as time went on, I realized that what they were really more afraid of, and what they certainly nearly put me in the bottom of a 5,000-foot hole over, was the work I was doing on a thermionic converter with an antenna. And I was not, in the beginning, going to convert heat. I was going to convert impulses from the solar wind bombardment, the proton bombardment of our magnetopoles outside the Earth's atmosphere, converting that with an antenna array on the surface of the Earth into electricity. And there's a huge amount of energy there that we could use. Huge. But when I started working on that, one day I was sitting there reading some of T. Henry Murray's stuff on how he was converting the mystery waves, the cosmic waves of space, as he called it, how he was converting the sea of energy and electricity in his little device. And I suddenly realized that he was converting an infrared spectrum in molecular movement straight into electricity. And he and two or three others, Meyer down in Arizona, who was a prisoner, and another guy, started with an IGN or something like that. Anyway, all three of them had found a way to simply take random motion of atoms, which we call heat, and convert that into electricity. Now, in the spacecraft or aircraft that use this that are classified, they have a material that is bombarded by a stream of particles, and it makes it release a lot of energy in the infrared spectrum in a narrow bandwidth where all atoms exchange energy. And then these photons of infrared hit a substance called a triboluminescent material, and it converts that frequency only, that bandwidth, straight into electrons, which is enough to power a gravity craft.
My gosh.
That's good for about a 20-year synopsis in 3 seconds.
Well, I tell you.
Well, is the material ceramic in nature, metallic, metallurgy? What's the nature?
The material is kind of, it's in appearance, what I'm aware of would have been white. A powder that had to be baked onto a material substrate. We were looking at compounds of zinc and another element that we would fuse onto metal. That's what I was researching at the time. And that coating became much like the coating that zinc phosphor you have on your TV screen, the old CRT tube types. And when electrons hit it, it would emit light, which you saw as pictures on your TV screen. Well, that material, that phosphor, is what's called a triboluminescent material. If you hit it with that same frequency of light, it will emit an electron out the other side. It'll work backwards. It's a gateway. And you just have to put together certain elements in certain concentrations, like a semiconductor in essence, but for light waves. And it will convert one form of energy to another. It becomes what's called a parametric circuit or substance as well. So it would be whitish, the one I was working with, and it would have extremely high dielectric factor, well over 30. In fact, it's measured in the hundreds, but that's the material. I'm not going to play with that here now because I don't have the lab resources and funding to do that, but I am continuing with three other types of alternate energy that use high voltage wind, a deep well into the telluric earth currents, and an antenna array that you put up in your backyard to interface with the bombardment by protons and other elements from the sun of our magnetopause. Okay?
Yeah, I got that. I tell you what, Stan, you something else.
I got it. Oh,
okay.
Come on.
Okay. She got it and I didn't, Stan. Okay.
Well, I've studied Stan's work. We thank you. And people need to know that your work is available out there to see, and they should, you know, buy your DVDs and see this stuff because it's absolutely.
Give us your sites again, Stan.
Oh, it's Standeo, Standeo. com. And if you go there, Holly's got all kinds of stuff on it that she updates daily.
Well, she does a good job on that site.
Well, I'll tell you what, she's an excellent researcher and webmaster for us and our clients. And you'll find that she goes in and puts daily news items that just stretch to infinity down the bottom there. I mean, just huge amounts of news happening daily now. People need to know.
Yeah, we've got a cutaway here for another break, and we'll be right back and continue the conversation. This is getting very, very interesting. We certainly appreciate you being with us this evening.
All righty, thank you.
Okay, we'll be right back. Thank you.
You could be waiting for a day that won't come.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown, and welcome back, Stan Dale. Stan, I do have a quick question about the white substance. And I know you don't want to get stuck here on this. Was it naturally occurring, or was it created in the laboratory?
Yes. It is part of the natural periodic table, at least what we were working with. They may have gone exotic. It wasn't like people were talking about like element 115 or anything like that. This was something found in Sweden in mining operations for other products, and it was something that came with the ore. So it's somewhat semiconductive in nature. It certainly is. It insulates against charge, so it's a dielectric.
You think that this free energy or these new alternative energy techniques and technology is going to make a big difference?
Not a big difference immediately. The reason is because the people that control the oil also control the alternate energy technologies that do work. They have had, look, we've got tons of oil, even the Alaskan oil field up there, Lindsay Williams talked about, that's only one of several huge oil fields that are capped off around the planet, including some down in Australia. Plenty of oil. But the guys that I worked with under Dr. Edward Teller, and Sir John Williams and Dr. Sakharov, all those guys, these were a multinational group of industrialists, bankers, engineers, physicists, scientists, and they had a common goal in that they wanted to deplete the Middle Eastern Islamic factions of the only thing that they had to negotiate on the world, and that was oil. Burn it, use it, develop it, keep our oil intact for medicines, plastics, and whatever later, and release the new energy technologies, the alternate energy technologies, once a global government, the Western style, the Judeo-Christian style, had been established by our side. They were still fighting the Crusades inside the Illuminati. That was one of the major things I found in the organization, was these old cotton top cigar smoking port drinking guys were still acting like knights moving pieces on a chessboard to go after the Islamic nations and put them down. Mind you, I'm not too much against that myself, the way they've been acting of late, but this was what it was about, was after the 13th Crusade and after Saladin the Great had defeated the last of the knights, the Crusaders there in the Middle East. We came back, and for hundreds of years after that, there was this building momentum to go back and take the Holy Land back from these people and to once and for all burn up all their oil, so they had to depend on us, and no one would buy their sand because that was all that would be left, and it would make them no longer a world power. But the best laid plans have gone astray, and since early 80s, things have certainly not gone the way the Illuminists planned.
Can I ask you, Stan, something? A lot of people, you know, they're concerned that they have developed life extension technologies because it seems like their plans, you know, they have patience and they take, you know, decades, hundreds of years, and you know, some people can argue a good argument that this stuff's been building for 1,000 years. We didn't get where we're at overnight. Do you think they have life extension technologies?
Oh, they themselves, I don't think so. I think the This opens up a whole bag of worms, but we have something, or there's been something here in the ancient days, thousands of years ago, like a stargate, except it's a dimensional gate between concentric universes in the Tower of Babel type stories.
Sure.
And beings came down from upper levels of the universes that are concentric around us, and they had this technology, and there's a war going on up there in their terms, which is being brought down here to Earth to a virtual courtroom to be played out very shortly. And the rebels, if you wish, have knowledge of these technologies. Now, whether they were here 2,000 years ago or 1,000 years ago to help the Illuminists live longer, I don't know. I would only be guessing because I have no evidence of that. But I do know that the flying saucer craft that use these electrogravitic fields generate a kind of field that lets you travel through time forward and not age very much at all, like a guy that traveled forward in time 5 days may only age 15 minutes or an even greater ratio. And it's because of the energy density on the molecules of the people inside the craft and the field. When they pump the energy density to a different level, it means that your atoms do not interact at the same rate they would in normal space here for us, and they're either faster or slower. And so you can either accelerate time or aging or delay it. And I even proposed that many years ago, decades ago, that we should build a chamber, so that call it the emergency chamber in the Defense Department, where we would generate a field like that inside, and put inside their computers and sleeping stuff and food and everything people would need for an emergency session, and so that if we got a report, say, that missiles had been launched from Russia at that moment, that we could go inside, put a team inside that room and say, okay, we need a solution in about 3 minutes, take 5 years, and they'd go inside there, do all their work, and spend 5 years finding solutions and how to do it the best way to stop all this, come back out. I mean, it would extend the power of our computing by just thousands, you see?
Sure.
So it would also, you could put people who are dying of terminal illnesses in there, and they wouldn't go to sleep. They would just go into a room and think, well, I guess I'll have a cup of tea or play some coffee and come back out. And years have passed. Technology has advanced, and they've got a cure.
Yeah, Stan, are we talking about different civilizations or whatever able to marshal and control energy fields on different levels of manipulation and dominance? Is that sort of what you're alluding to in a way?
Even bigger than that. The Critias and Timaeus debates by Plato talking about Atlantis and the 12 sons of God who were cast down or to earth from a high place and who went bad tell about beings from the upper levels. The Genesis account of the creation of man tell about beings from the upper levels coming down and modifying, making a being that was different from the man-apes and all that kind of junk. In the Ethiopian area, which is where the Omo Valley and the mitochondrial Eve were found, and the oldest humanoid, erectus humanoid was found, all this points to the tale of us being created by the Elohim, they, the oneness God, as true. Now, whether you call it a simple civilization or not, I don't know. Anybody that can build a universe as a virtual courtroom or whatever, you know, to me, they're not simple. They are the ultimate, as far as I can see. What is beyond them, I don't know. But for what we're concerned with here on Earth, we must deal with that civilization, that kingdom, as the near and present either danger or salvation for mankind. And believe me, I'm a messianic believer, and I think the Lord is coming to get his church very soon. We are at that time.
Well, you come from a family of Huguenots, is that right?
Yeah, on my dad's side,
dad,
they were, but by my dad's mother was Jewish, so I've got the mix of both.
Okay, so, yeah, I was noticing that, and you have some very interesting things about some of the first Huguenot house up there in New York and all that. It's very interesting background there about your family.
And Stan, so you've done a lot of comparative analysis of mythology. Where did you first decide about the centrifugal universe? Is that right? Am I saying that correctly?
Concentric. People have been told it's like a parallel universe, what Einstein was saying. But if you read, if you analyze his equations and his discussion on it, what he was talking about was around every gravitational thing, like a planet, a moon, a star, there are concentric, or like other shells of existence that pass through us, and we pass through them, expanding and contracting, and our molecules are never together at the same moment because we're on a different wave. And that's how Einstein explained it, and it's more properly called concentric rather than parallel, but parallel will do, and that's the common usage.
Yeah, parallel universes is really a common term, isn't it?
But you're saying
concentric is a more specific term and description, maybe?
Well, that means, yeah, it's because it's around a spherical center and it's concentric.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But parallel means, okay, there's one existing.
Yeah,
right,
I got
next
you.
To it.
I got
okay,
you.
And that'll do it. In fact, I think there are
that's
probably.
That's similar, yeah.
Yeah, there are at least seven levels spoken of in the ancient writing that we can find.
Well, okay, and you're talking about spherical geometry then is the way that the universe is established or
gravity,
or
actually.
What, we laugh about this. I've written a I'm on the second part of a three-part paper where I'm explaining gravity, how it works, and electricity and magnetism, how they really work. And I've changed the Maxwell equations for electricity into force, and motion and acceleration. I put them into Newtonian terms. In simple terms and illustrate it. And one of the things that I found out while writing this paper is that God is right-handed because the initial Big Bang put a right-hand twist on everything.
Okay. Would you like to hold over the second hour, Stan?
We'd love to have you.
Well, okay.
Would you have the time?
I have another guest. How do I do that?
We'll have a discussion because Dr. Fred Bell is right in there with Montauk Projects and the Stargate and everything else.
Okay.
And we'd love to introduce you.
Yeah, we'd love to hold you over if you have the time.
Sure.
Okay, we're going to be leaving here. That little song there, I wrote that song called Light a Little Candle that we're leaving on. We've got about a six-minute break at the top of the hour, Stan, so if you need to take care of anything, that's the time to do it. And then we'll be back about 6 minutes after the hour, at the top of the hour. Okay? Thank you very much for the discussion, and thank you very much for being with us this evening. We'll be right back. Thank you, Mr. Dale.